to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello, how are you all? Welcome to episode 15 of the What Bitcoin Did podcast. If you listened to last week's episode, you will know I was out in Brooklyn with Robert Payone, aka Crypto Bobby. He invited me out there to meet up with the AirSwap team, who he's been working with. And whilst I was there, I had the chance to sit down and have a chat with Don Mositis, one of the co-founders of AirSwap. The interview took place the day after they launched the platform, so we did it in their office, so there is a little bit of background noise, but nothing too much to distract from the recording. I have been getting increasingly approached by projects to come up and meet with them and, you know, have them on the podcast, and I pretty much say no to all of them unless it's a project I'm really interested in. And AirSwap is one I have been watching from the sidelines for a while, so I was more than happy to do it. I wasn't paid for it or anything, so don't worry about that. No conflict of interest. I just think the whole mechanism for decentralized exchanges is a pretty interesting area at the moment. So yes, very happy to go and do this, and I was very happy to go and meet up with Don, who is probably one of the most laid-back and chilled people I have interviewed so far. No, he is. He is the most laid-back and chilled person. And that was pretty incredible, seeing it was the day after they had launched the platform, which I'm sure had a lot of stress going with it. But it was a really cool interview. We discussed a whole bunch of things, the various challenges facing the team around security, asset pricing, and liquidity. And I definitely learned a lot from it. So I hope you will do too. Also, as you know, I've got my first sponsor, which is Trade.io, which I will be officially announcing in a bit more detail next week, and I'm working with them on a cool competition for you guys, specifically for anyone who listens to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which should be pretty damn cool. In other news, on Monday, I am off to Japan to record one or maybe two interviews, which I am really looking forward to. I've never been to Japan, so that should be pretty fun. Anyone who's out in Tokyo and wants to go hang out and have a beer, then please give me a shout, because I'm going to be in the city for a few days on my own. Then hopefully I'm going to be off to New York for Consensus. I don't think I'm going to attend the conference. I really just want to go and meet up with a few people, record a couple more episodes of the podcast, hopefully, and just hang out with other people I know who are going to be in New York. So again, hit me up if you're going to be there. It'd be cool to meet up with a few of you. And also, as I mentioned on last week's show, my training course is now live. It's on the website. It's still there. It's still free. Please go and check it out. The website's www.whatbitcoindid.com, and you will see a big button for the training session. And you know what? I'm not precious. If you've got any feedback, things that can be improved, give me a shout. It all helps. Also, please do support the show. Yes, I ask this every week, and I'm sure it's becoming annoying, but it really does help. So please go onto iTunes and leave us a review. I hope you think it deserves 5 stars. A lot of work goes into this. So yes, if you can do that, that would be great. Also, follow me on social media. I am on Medium, Twitter, Steemit, Instagram, on every single one. My handle is at What Bitcoin Did. And I've also launched a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/whatbitcoindid. So go like that if you want to follow or like everything. I've already mentioned the website, but again, it's www.whatbitcoindid.com. And you can also sign up to my newsletter, which I'm hoping to do a bit more with soon. I am just got so much on, so try to fit it all in. Also, please do share out the show, send it to your friends and family, anyone you think it might be interested. That would be very cool. And anyone who is interested in becoming a sponsor, please do reach out to me, because this is all self-financed and any sponsors really do help keep the show going, especially as I do all interviews in person, and flights and accommodation do add up to a lot. So anyway, listen, let's move on to the interview with Don. I hope you enjoy it. As ever, if you have any feedback, please do get in touch. Do give me a shout. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And I do pretty much, I think I reply to almost anyone apart from any weird nonsense I receive. So yes, do reach out. Also, check out AirSwap. It is really cool, especially if you're lazy like me and you can't be bothered to log in exchanges and you just want to buy tokens instantly. I think it's a very cool exchange. I'm definitely going to be using it a lot more. Although saying that, I shouldn't be really calling an exchange, because it isn't. Well, that's what they say. But anyway, you'll find this out in the interview as Don explains it all. Hi, Don. How you doing?
Doing very well, thanks.
So AirSwap launched yesterday. How did that go?
It's very exciting. We rolled it out basically over the course of the day. And there are a few different components of that. One was having it go live on our site, and we introduced a totally new website, totally new brand, and had the marketplace go live there. We also have a widget that can be deployed on any website, so we had a partner fire that up yesterday as well, so that was really exciting.
Any last-minute hiccups, anything that happened that had you pulling your hair out?
Actually, it was quite smooth. Intense overall. A lot of things had to come together. I mean, this is the integration of several different significant efforts that we've undertaken in the last, you know, since our launch in last October.
Okay.
And you know, just pulling everything together and making it all work, smoothing it over was challenging, but a lot of fun, and actually went very well.
And how much sleep have you had recently?
Not a ton. Going to be trying to catch up on that soon.
Okay, so before we get into the details of AirSwap, do you want to just tell me a bit about your background and how you came to be involved in creating it?
Sure, absolutely. So I have a background in early stage technology startups, and actually spent most of my career in the Bay Area, in San Francisco.
Okay.
And I've just been involved with teams, small and large, in different spaces and social games and consumer web and some ad tech, some big data.
Okay.
So I've kind of had a pretty good variety. A lot of that I've been able to apply in just the lessons learned over the years. But for me, I had actually with my co-founder Oved, he and I went to school together, so I've known him for a good decade or so. But for me to, I had always kind of looked at the space, and really tried to imagine, because I'm really a product guy at the end of the day, and I need to, you know, envision how a technology can be applied. And so, had always kind of had my eye on blockchain. And I think that really came to be when, this phenomenon of tokenization started to take form around this time last year. I mean, a little bit longer, you know, further behind that. But that was when it really started to click for me.
Okay.
as the notion that assets can be, both virtual and real, can be represented online through the blockchain.
Okay.
They can be, like, the ownership and the authenticity of these assets can be just like asserted on this global network is really, really exciting. And so what emerges from that is the need for trade.
Okay.
What we saw early on, and even today, the majority of trade is on these centralized venues, and that is just a source of systemic risk.
Okay.
And we really find that unacceptable in the longer term.
So your first exposure to this was when? In terms of when did you first become aware of crypto as, not aware, but as something that started to impact your life?
To impact my life. So
when it became significant to you?
Got it. Well, I think it became significant when I really started to focus on, when Oved and I really started to talk more deeply about this about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
I had always just admired had pretty consistently been working on ways to make blockchain technology, you know, figure out what kinds of applications are going to emerge beyond cryptocurrency, basically.
Mm-hmm.
From pretty early on, did kind of have my eye on it. Even, you know, back in the day when everybody started to hear about this new thing called Bitcoin, it was all very exciting. But as an applications guy, again, you know, just trying to make this kind of work beyond currency.
Okay. So a number of the centralized exchanges have obviously had quite significant hacks. You know, everything from Mt. Gox through to the recent, I can't remember the name of the exchange, but had the NEM hack. Obviously, this creates a demand in the market for decentralized exchanges and publicity for what you're doing. Why was a decentralized exchange the thing you decided to go for?
So it does emerge from this phenomenon of tokenization. There's a need for trade, a need for exchange. Our thesis is that exchange itself was decentralized with the advent of peer-to-peer trade as Bitcoin on blockchain. And the introduction of these models that you see that have emerged in Wall Street in these centralized venues. So a central limit order book is basically something that does very well in a centralized context, very high performance, highly automatable, singular execution engine, does very well in that context. And if you attempt to decentralize that, you encounter a variety of issues. And so that's why there's this attraction to remain centralized, and why the majority of trade, even in crypto, is centralized. It does seem kind of counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. So my co-founder Oved has, you know, he's a veteran trader, and really knows these types of things inside and out. He'll tell you the story someday, but he got involved in the space through some really great people at Consensus, maybe going on 2 years ago now, I think, and started to think about how to apply his background and knowledge to the space and try to decentralize exchange. But realized early on that several kind of issues emerge once you start to try to shoehorn these centralized models into a decentralized context. It goes back to that idea that trade execution on an order book needs to really happen in a single place, because otherwise you are trying to reach some form of consensus as to the priority at which these trades are executed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're either doing that as a central authority or finding some way to reach consensus, which sounds a lot like a blockchain.
Which is why
it takes time.
So this is why AirSwap doesn't have an order book.
So that is what brings us to AirSwap, exactly. So, uh-huh. It was at this point that he and I started to talk about, well, so what, you know, what are the solutions here? There must be a way forward. And really, I think, tried to think in simple terms. What does it mean to decentralize? And we've seen what that means, because Bitcoin, through blockchain, decentralized as a system of value transfer. So if we can embrace that, and if we can embrace the act of peer-to-peer trade and try to step back and determine what is going to make that work effectively as a means of trade, brought us to this idea of what we call the indexer, which is basically a search engine for traders to come online, announce that they're trading certain tokens, and make themselves available for counterparties to discover and connect to them. So it turns into this more free-form kind of network where it creates a ton of flexibility, actually, in both the ability to come online and be available for trade, or to disconnect and become unavailable as your conditions kind of change. If you want to, you want to make a trade, you come in, you make a trade, you leave again. But also as new assets come online, we believe that this is really like the ultimately scalable solution for this type of thing. Like the token economy itself, as more tokens come online, mm-hmm. having a system that you are actively listing assets on is not scalable. Like you see on these centralized venues, very time consuming, takes a ton of energy by their team to assess each individual asset. And many times they're charging a ton of money to actually list anything.
Wallet maintenance?
Sorry?
They have wallet maintenance issues as well?
They have a lot of other things going on as well. Okay. But the idea really is that it's a manual process to make additional assets available for trade. But in our system, it's just a matter of somebody come online and announcing that they're trading a new asset. And that can be instantly discoverable by somebody else.
But that facility isn't there right now, right? You have...
Oh, it is.
I thought AirSwap launched with a number of limited tokens.
We announced these 24 tokens.
Yeah.
These 24 tokens are on the platform because liquidity providers that are connected to the platform are trading them.
Right. But if essentially market makers, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so if a market maker wants to make available another token, mm-hmm. they they can just do that from their side?
Yes.
The interface updates?
Yes.
The logo appears? How does that kind of, just the basic infrastructure items such as that?
So the way that the metadata works, yep, is there's a few different components of that. And that's actually a very interesting topic as well. Let's see where to start here. So at the very basic, the smart contract that represents the asset that they're trying to trade, mm-hmm, will contain some metadata. It'll have like a ticker symbol and, you know, like a supply and things like that, which we can use to do to kind of like bootstrap, you know, how this thing is represented. Mm-hmm. And our team can also fetch or determine or work with a given project to like have the correct metadata, mm-hmm, much like you have on any other app, like one of these wallets. They'll have like the logo and the description.
There is a process for it to be added. It isn't.
So the token itself can be made available for trade.
Okay.
It's just a matter of the way that it's represented.
Okay.
So it can be made available for trade with the metadata that's on the contract.
Okay.
And searchable as that, and that's fine.
Okay.
What we do on our side, on the kind of the search engine side, is make it a little bit more accessible for everyday people.
Okay. So you've launched with three liquidity providers.
Yes.
Yes. Are they all providing liquidity to the same assets, or are they providing different assets?
It's a variety, and that actually kind of changes over time as well.
So if three of them are providing liquidity for something like Basic Attention Token, and I go on to AirSwap and say I want to buy, you know, 1,000 of the tokens, does it just give me the cheapest price available from those three?
So it will actually ask all three of them for a price, mm-hmm, and it will say this is the best price. You can still see the other ones. So say you like what you see, and maybe you're getting a good price from the first one. Maybe you want to take that, but you still want to check out the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Say, whatever reason you have to do that.
Okay.
So all three are there, but we say this is the best one.
Okay, and it kind of sounds like an order book, though.
Well, no, because AirSwap is providing the connectivity through search.
Yeah.
And so you come in, and you run a search, you determine where those three can be found.
Mm-hmm.
Your browser asks the three of them for orders.
Right. I see.
And then they return the order to you, and then you have that order in hand, mm-hmm, and have the option to fill it.
Right. So they create the... They create the offer at the time that you...
Exactly. It's for you.
Yeah, okay. So it sounds more than like a marketplace.
That sounds about right.
Okay. So I took a look at it. For me, it looked kind of... I quite liked it. I said to you before we started recording that I don't buy from... I don't buy with market orders. I buy from the order book. I quite like, as an experience, Coinbase, because it's quite simple. I want to buy 10 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's the price. And I also kind of like Shapeshift. And it kind of feels like it's a hybrid of the two to me.
So one of the earliest ways that we were describing this was that... So we were thinking about... that interaction model you have with Shapeshift is nice. So they have like a deposit address and a receive address.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the only counterparty to your trade. You know, things kind of happen between when you send them something and they send you back something.
Mm-hmm.
On our side, you can have many counterparties to your trade, so you have competitive pricing. And also that trade, the trade itself is atomic.
Yes.
So there's no risk in the trade itself executing or having an issue with the execution once it's been issued.
And Shapeshift seems to sometimes come up against liquidity issues as well.
They may.
Yeah. Okay, so in some ways then, the place I see AirSwap, I just wrote a course, right? A very basic introductory course, how to get involved in cryptocurrencies to try to help people. And a part of that process, I did a tutorial on Coinbase, which is easy. Anyone's going to be able to sign up, create an account, and buy. And then I tried to explain how to sign up to Bittrex and to buy from there, and it felt very complicated. And yeah. I know a lot of people will get lost. I also find in crypto... UX, UI, user experience is it's not always at the forefront, but looking at AirSwap, you seem to have made probably one of the easiest places to go and buy tokens. Have you got a more retail focus on this? Do you see yourself as, is that the market you're going for?
So with this release, I think that we determined, and I mean, I could like draw it out, but it's not going to be, you know, it's a visual thing.
Yeah.
But we decided that the three kind of components that were, that we want to target to establish this network are to focus on liquidity, of course, which means working with and ensuring that this is the right kind of system for market makers. The connectivity, which is what we provide between traders, and then reach or distribution. And it's between the liquidity providers and the distribution, or the integrators or the front ends, that we provide connectivity. And it's that liquidity that is driven from these market makers through to consumers, retail, traders, basically. And on our end, between focusing on liquidity as provided by market makers, connectivity through our indexer or search engine, and then reach through front ends, much like what you used earlier today, mm-hmm. and also the widget being able to be deployed on virtually any website, and also accessible from any Ethereum-enabled device, and with language support for now 8 languages, we're really just trying to bring the front end to within whatever context that you're trying to trade.
But who's your target consumer for this?
So right now, what we think is, so on our front end, we have just kind of the everyday crypto community who wants mm-hmm. to come in, pick an asset, find a seller, find a buyer, make a trade. Certainly, you know, a ton of great people that, many of whom are a part of our community that are engaging in this kind of activity. But also, something that we discovered recently as more of the projects that launched tokens in the last year are starting to come online. I think they're encountering a situation where their users need tokens and their users want to become power users or use whatever features within respective applications they need. So they need tokens and there's not a simple interface to get them and there's not necessarily liquidity for them.
Right. Okay.
And so what we fairly recently discovered was that the same kind of liquidity, connectivity, reach aspect that we realized was going to be powerful came into play where we can provide this front-end widget for one of these dApps to drop into their site.
Mm-hmm.
For example, with a company called AdChain.
Yep.
They have the widget live right now, and people okay. are just trading into ADT, which is their token that they can vote to whitelist advertising domains and things like that. And so to even really use the front end of AdChain, you need to be able to acquire these tokens to use it and to vote. And so we can provide them the front end, which makes it, as you saw, very simple mm-hmm. to do that, but also can work with market makers on the other side to ensure that liquidity is provided for them.
Okay.
So this is a great use case, we think. And so it's, you know, we have this everyday trading activity that we talked about, but we also have more of these projects coming online that need this functionality.
And does it just have to be a token provider that can do this, or if I wanted to have AirSwap on my website, could I have AirSwap on
Absolutely,
my
website? Absolutely,
yeah. So whilst that's a brilliant idea, does that present a risk, a phishing risk, that people will start creating clones of AirSwap?
Yeah, we've thought about this. So there's a few different things you can do. So from an implementation standpoint, your website runs on your domain, our trading front end runs on our domain, and, you know, everything's kind of sandboxed, and everything is still peer-to-peer, so you're in control of the ultimate transaction that you're sending between you and a counterparty, so you can see what's going on before any assets are moved. But the ability to just know and be confident that you're actually using AirSwap is something that's very important.
Yeah, of course.
And so there are best practices in just, for example, on AirSwap, maybe setting some kind of something recognizable, whether it's a phrase or an image or something like that, so that anytime you encounter that widget on a third-party website, you would be presented that. If you don't recognize it, you're in the wrong place. That's
right.
Sort of
okay.
thing.
So it is, that's something you've, a challenge you've got, you're aware of.
It is, but we think there's definitely a solution, and that really is about just coming out and saying, this is how it works. Anytime you encounter AirSwap, this is what you should expect. This is how it's, you know, how to stay safe. This does play into kind of a broader effort that we're making into just educating people on how to take care of themselves on the decentralized web, which, you know, with the power of decentralization, of course, comes a ton of risk and responsibility. It's just a matter of being sharp and aware, and it's a matter of these tools presenting people with the actual state of things. And you know, I think as it pertains to this, actually, when you are using a wallet, right now, I think most wallets will show you, for example, if you're, you know, how much Ether you're sending with the transaction, which is very important. But more of these trades are going to be happening in smart contracts that represent assets, tokens. And so the kind of, you know, for these wallets to start to parse out the details of what these transactions are is going to be very important, I think. Because right now, if you fire up a MetaMask, or actually maybe even on your ledger, it says, this is the amount you're sending, and there's data present. It doesn't tell you what the data is, but that data could represent a trade. And so as a user, you want to be able to see what's going on there in more detail, I think.
Right,
but, okay. I mean, these are UX issues that'll be solved.
And do you have a responsibility at all on price? So in a centralized exchange with an order book, you kind of have, you, although the arbitrage exists, you kind of feel confident that you'll get in a fair market price because you can see the buyers and sellers. You can see the order book move. I guess one thing is, if I was to be buying on AirSwap and seeing the price, I would also just be very quickly wanting to check on Binance or Bittrex and see if it is a fair price. Do you guys have a responsibility for that? And is that something that you consider, or is all trust with the market makers who are providing the liquidity?
Well, I think in any case, you need to, I mean, you need to be, it's about information, right? And that when you get a price and you're about to make that decision, you need as much information as you can get to be confident in that price.
Okay.
And so, like you said, maybe you check Binance, maybe you check another exchange or something. But on our end, there's this challenge it's this kind of decision to trade scenario where right now what we do is give you a link to CoinMarketCap.
Right, okay.
But what we also do is we have some built-in price bands just to ensure that things are within, you know, a certain range on the front end, just to have that kind of basic protection.
Yes.
But this is something that we... earlier in the conversation, we were talking about exchange being decentralized with peer-to-peer. So the act of exchange is between peers, and that's why we don't consider ourselves an exchange. But what is required to make that work? One of the things is discovery through the indexer and search engine we were talking about. But also another is information about the relative price of assets. So as more tokens come online, many of them won't even be traded on exchanges, and these exchanges are helping to establish value. But in a peer-to-peer context, when you don't have an exchange to establish value, the most information you can get about it is really important. So maybe that's prior experience with an asset or something like that. But that's why we introduced the notion of this oracle who can help you make that decision to trade by providing price suggestions based on a number of factors.
And there's certainly an ease of use thing here. You know, if you're operating with quite high levels of security, you know, even logging into Bittrex or Binance and putting your passwords and your authenticator code, it takes some time. You know, it takes time. Similar with Amazon, sometimes I don't compare the prices of things I buy because the ease of use with buying something on Amazon, they've pretty much nailed it. So,
yeah.
I can see people using AirSwap just as ease of use. If you quickly want to buy something, the process is going to be quite quick. But at the same time, I almost feel like I would want to be able to see exchange prices next to it. You know,
totally agree.
Because a marginal difference is fine, right?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to pay a significant difference.
Absolutely not. And that depends on a personal, maybe not even personal, but like a situational kind of sensitivity to price.
Yeah.
Say, you know, you want to pick something up in a hurry and you go and you see, okay, this price looks sane. Maybe in a different scenario, you want to be very specific and you want to make sure that you have all the information about how this is trading elsewhere. And so, yeah, it's certainly within our responsibility from a product design perspective to make sure that you have the information you need to make that trade.
And another thing that would be quite interesting would be is if you're creating quite a significant order, because if you're ordering from an order book,
yeah,
the price scales through the order book. Yet if you're buying from AirSwap and you're buying a significant amount, is the market maker looking at an order book elsewhere to try and do you understand where I'm trying to get
yes.
to? They're trying to make sure that you're not getting a much better price, or are they setting it at the market price no matter how much you buy?
Well, these folks have very
sophisticated tools.
Yes, exactly. And so that the way that they actually price their trades is, we don't necessarily know how they price the trades. This is great platform for larger trades, for these larger kind of block style trades. Because, if you try to perform something like that on an order book, things will go kind of haywire.
Mm.
And so we definitely see a great use case for that as well. But I mean, the way that a market maker is going to price a larger trade will maybe even be case by case.
Could AirSwap, with significant volume, actually affect market pricing, or is AirSwap more like OTC?
We think it's more like OTC.
Right.
And we definitely kind of stand behind that classification. You will see these trades being executed on the contract, on the smart contract. And so you do see the amounts that are being traded.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does kind of, that's emitted as a stream of settled trades at certain prices. So that is informational. But, there's no order book there. Okay.
And has there been much activity in the last 24 hours?
Yeah, actually, in a wide range. We've actually gotten some larger orders as well. Come through the system, tons of smaller ones, people just trying things out, which is really awesome. Good stuff.
And so there are already decentralized exchanges out there. So we already have EtherDelta. And they had their own security issue that came up recently, but wasn't so obvious, whereby it was a DNS attack, right? What different security issues or challenges do you face as a decentralized exchange over a centralized exchange?
Mm-hmm. First, we don't consider ourselves a decentralized exchange.
Yes, so I apologize. Yeah,
but
you're
understood.
A market, but,
understood.
But you're operating similar to a...
Well, we are decentralizing exchange itself.
Okay.
The way that we see this is that there are three components of trade.
Mm-hmm.
One is custody, like who's actually holding the assets at any given time. One is execution, as far as the priority at which trades are executed, the price at which they're executed. And then the settlement, which is where the funds are actually transferred between parties. And in many, or if not most, cases, these centralized crypto exchanges are centralizing all three of these. So they hold your assets, they handle execution, they handle settlement. And in many ways, and we say this because it's true, these are even more centralized than their Wall Street counterparts, because in Wall Street you have different entities handling these different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems kind of crazy that it's not just that in this new decentralized world you have centralized exchange, but in many ways it's more centralized than existing trading systems. So the idea for us was that because the active exchange, we believe, was decentralized with peer-to-peer value transfer through Bitcoin and blockchain, the custody, execution, and settlement is out of our hands. And therefore, this systemic risk by centralizing any one of those three is relieved because we are not involved in it. So AirSwap provides discovery. So you come and find a counterparty, and then once you're interacting with the counterparty, the execution and settlement happen when you settle that trade. And of course, the assets are in your control at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if we you know, if we went offline for a certain amount of time, there would not be a risk of your assets being lost because we don't hold them. There's no front running on our system because there's nothing to front run.
So if you went offline, does it just mean the execution of the smart contract will just fail?
No. So you and I could actually make a trade without AirSwap.
Okay.
Right? Because I can provide you an order. You can take that, plug it into to execute an Ethereum transaction, point it at the swap contract and make the trade. What AirSwap does is presents that in a friendly way so that people can connect and communicate those orders between each other and then make those trades. So I think ultimately we believe that peer-to-peer trade is really the truest form of decentralized trade, and we're trying to make that as accessible and easy to use as possible.
So I'm confused. Where does the smart contract get activated from?
The smart contract lives on Ethereum,
yep.
And its functions are called by individual users.
Right, okay.
Directly. We do not participate in that.
So where are your risks then? What keeps you up at night? What do you worry about?
I think it's mainly in bad actors, in phishing, in misrepresentation, and just the ways that people can be tricked into having confidence in using something that is you know, malicious, basically. So every day we have, you know, new Twitter accounts pop up, and I mean everybody does, right? That's the nature of the space. But that, I think, for us is the most significant risk. But for the most part, when you talk about decentralized trade, the way that we've designed this, we've decentralized all this risk in as many ways as we possibly can. So,
and I guess the design of AirSwap, you've also, although you aren't an exchange or, you know, marketplace, one of the main issues facing decentralized exchanges is liquidity. Mm-hmm. But your approach to it by not having an order book is, you've avoided that issue.
This is why we focused on what we did over the course of the last few months, basically. So early on, we figured that what is going to comprise the system is the liquidity and the connectivity and the reach or distribution. And so we focused first on liquidity, and we said, what is going to make market makers happy in the system? What kinds of protocols are they going to need to use? Right? How do we reach out to them? How do we communicate with them? How do we make this work? And so before we could even launch what we have today, we needed to ensure that we had liquidity providers at the ready. Market makers online and available to make trades by the time you know, we opened the doors, basically. Mm-hmm. So we bootstrap liquidity with those three market makers we talked about who are serving trades in these 24 assets. Bring in consumers and retail traders, and then that having connected those two groups, I've already certainly gotten more attention on the market making side. People interested in making markets on AirSwap, and likewise more and more integration partners. So, for example, with the widget integration, more dApps and websites are going to see that in action and just want to plug into the system.
Okay. So you're not taking a fee on any of the transactions. So how does AirSwap make money?
So,
and the second question to that,
okay.
I'm obviously aware of the AirSwap token. Is there any enterprise value, or are you entirely focused on token value?
Enterprise value versus token value.
Yeah, so you obviously have a company here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you creating value in the company, or are you only interested in creating value in the token?
Got it.
Yeah.
So the token itself is something that is held by market makers in order to use the system, mm-hmm. in order to basically have a place on the indexer to be discoverable to make those markets. And so that's why we sell the AirSwap token, mm-hmm. For market makers to use the platform. Because, of course, in developing and operating the platform itself, we incur costs in doing so. And so that's the token model there. We also have a voting utility that plays into that.
But do they have to own a fixed amount?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they hold a certain amount to hold a position on the indexer.
What's the total supply of AirSwap?
The total supply of AirSwap, let's see here. In circulation, I believe it's 150 million.
150 million. So for the AirSwap token to have value, you have to have more market makers want to to come in, and then they obviously are going to have to be buying the token to join it. Is that the economics behind AirSwap? Is there anything else?
So AirSwap as a platform that and we're talking about the token utility now,
yeah,
is oriented around the indexer and the index utility.
Okay.
That's right.
Sounds risky.
What's risky?
Well, it doesn't sound to me like, you know, it sounds like you're going to have a lot of market makers interested in joining. But once you hit a point, say you hit a flat growth of market makers, the token will lose value because there's no velocity.
So I think that there are actually ways that we're looking to expand the utility,
okay,
as we expand our offering and the platform. Mm-hmm. And also, likewise, as a company,
yeah,
we have and gonna see more of this actually in just a few week and a half or so away at an event that we're hosting called the Fluidity Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have some pretty interesting things that we're going to be presenting there.
Like professional services?
This is more as it relates to basically we as the company who build and operate AirSwap.
Okay.
So there's going to be more of that. But as far as the token goes, we do believe that there is more the token utility will play a larger role.
Mm-hmm.
For professionals on this kind of token trading network, as we progress.
Okay.
So,
can you say how many tokens you need to be a market maker?
That is at a price today of 250 AirSwap tokens for an individual, what we call intent. And so, you need to hold 250 tokens to keep that position on the indexer for that market, basically.
Okay. So there's space for a lot of market makers then, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but these rates, these change over time, basically.
Yeah, it's a common problem facing a lot of utility tokens.
Mm-hmm.
When they become tested in the market, is there value in the token? Is there value in holding it?
Well, so about... I think you mentioned velocity,
yeah,
which means to say that I hold and then I don't hold.
Yeah.
A market maker can only make that market on AirSwap as long as they hold,
yeah,
that token. So if they're if they're trading a given token, if they're making a market, they need to hold that token for as long as they're making that market on AirSwap. So it's not necessarily you come in, you do something, and then it's done, and then you...
No, but what I'm thinking is if there's 150 million tokens and... you need 250
mm-hmm.
to be part. So far, there's only actual use of 750 tokens. So there's 149 million,
yeah,
900. You see what I'm going at?
Yeah.
There's a lot. So
yep.
If someone was to buy the AirSwap token now, they'd have to have a high confidence that a significant amount of market makers will join AirSwap, and therefore their token will have demand, or that there's some new utility that will come.
Yeah. So I think there's multiple factors there. One is that we see a future where there are an indefinite number of assets being brought online and need to be traded and will be traded by market makers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you consider the number of assets coming online, the number of traders that are going to be doing this as market makers over the course of however many years. This is our platform today.
Mm-hmm.
We see a very bright and long future for this. So in combination of the growth of the network itself and what we're building and the like the number of assets that are coming online, we certainly see more and more market makers actually coming into the system and then playing a role.
Okay, I see.
So you see, this is why we need to allocate a certain amount so that we, you know, we don't end up in a place where there's just like a ridiculously high demand for it and just not enough supply to actually make the markets for what we see as an ultimately global network serving many, many, many tokens.
So let's fast forward 10 years. Tokenization of the world's happened.
Cool.
Every asset's been tokenized. You know, something that's likely going to happen, which is it's promising. A market maker wants to join the platform. There's no tokens available. Is it a case they have to buy out another market maker? Then how do you see that playing out?
In that case, they could very well acquire the token by some other means, for sure.
Okay. it's just a tricky thing. So, you know, sorry to pressure on it, but it's, you know, one of the things that keeps coming, you know, up, and me as a trader is, you know, where is the utility? And there's obviously there is utility, but the supply and demand in your utility, just there's like an imbalance at the moment. So I guess that's a...
Yes. Well, we also see this as being pretty early days, and we see an enormous potential for this kind of system. So that's why we arranged things the way we did.
So do you, so I guess the play you're making long term is you want to be the primary marketplace for tokens. That's
Absolutely.
Your play. Okay. Cool.
Thank you.
So I noticed that you've got Ledger, you've got MetaMask, no Trezor support yet. I assume that's just a technical reason?
Yeah, we actually have it running internally.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, so we actually have, and you know, this, I mean, we could be very, very kind of honest about this. So as you come into any major release, you've got a lot of things that you have lined up, a lot of things you want to include. As you approach the release, you have to kind of face different issues that arise in different scenarios. We were integrating a ton of different things at the same time. The Trezor support required a technical change on one other system, and we decided to not implement that so close to the actual release. So
because of their change?
No, it was on our end.
Oh, okay.
So the way that you generate addresses from Trezors is different. This different wallets kind of treat this in different ways, and so we have to handle the way that we validate a signature versus the public key differently.
Right.
So in most cases, you can take the signature and actually extract the public key from that. And in this case, we could not make that do the same calculation, basically. So you need to pass both the signature and the key to test that the key that you pull out of the signature matches that.
Okay. So that's just a future.
It's just a technical. Yeah, it's not.
And... How is it different integrating with MetaMask over Ledger?
So, I mean, the key difference is that MetaMask provides you an account, and you switch the account within the extension. And on Ledger, we pull up and present the different accounts that are available, and you choose. But yeah,
right. So, in researching this, the only thing I could compare you to was decentralized exchanges, and I started having a look at some of the challenges they faced. One of the things that came up that I thought was quite interesting and I want to ask you about is blockchain to blockchain transactions. It's obviously something you would have thought about. It's not easily possible now. So obviously you're based on ERC-20 tokens at the moment. But in the future, how do you envisage that's going to happen? Where is that within your roadmap? Is it within your roadmap?
So I think there are two ways that we're thinking about this. One is these cross-chain swaps, and we call them atomic swaps.
Yeah.
So if one side fails, the entire transaction fails. These are somewhat complex and kind of, you know, not very fast. They're good for maybe a larger kind of peer-to-peer trade between chains. We think that, so the alternative kind of view is representing disparate assets as Ethereum tokens. So you have a token that is pegged to the dollar. You have a token that represents Bitcoin. Because then once you've like hoisted external assets as Ethereum tokens into this ecosystem, then they're just freely tradable. But then the trick is the redemption. So being sure that if you hold one of these Ethereum tokens, then you can actually redeem it for its respective asset elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And both of these approaches have different challenges. The second one is pretty interesting because you can do that in automated ways, for example, with like an Oracle network that controls like a multi-signature wallet. And that has its own kind of risks and issues and things like that. You don't want to be in a place where if you're holding an Ethereum token that represents Bitcoin, it represents like maybe Bitcoin, you know? So yeah. there are different challenges as a trading platform. We're definitely thinking about these things, and this is becoming even more of like an ecosystem project and challenge, and we're working with more and more projects on this as well.
So is something you're tackling right now? You are.
Oh yeah, I mean this is something we're pretty consistently thinking about and talking to others about. So.
And on AirSwap at the moment, just to jump back, can you swap? Is there a trading pair for any asset, or is it all Ethereum to token? And then, like, can I swap BAT for ICX?
The platform supports any ERC-20 for any ERC-20.
Okay, that's
what
pretty
we
cool.
did. What we did do for this release was make it so you come in and you either buy with Ether or you sell for Ether.
Okay.
I mean, you're selling for wrapped Ether, but that's a technical issue. But you're basically making trades against Ether. And that's because we're really trying to reduce this to the simplest case in the simplest form. You come in with Ether, you make a purchase, and you go about your day. For example, with the ad chain guys, people just want to acquire some ad chain so they can make some votes in the system. So they come in with their Ether, make a trade, jump back out to the app again. There is a parallel effort that we're undergoing right now to work on a more sophisticated kind of peer-to-peer trading front end. And that's going to emerge over time. That it gives you more flexibility and capabilities in terms of what you can trade and on what terms. So
okay, in terms of obviously you're a crypto to crypto. Do you ever see a scenario where there will be a fiat exchanges within a marketplace such as yours or decentralized exchange? And is that something you guys are looking at all?
So these days, you basically like buy in to a system. So you purchase Ether using dollars, and then with the Ether you can do other things. Mm-hmm. And of course, you need like a bank to go from fiat to crypto in that case. This actually goes back to what we were just talking about with representing fiat as Ethereum tokens in different ways. And that, like, if that's solved in a reliable way where you can actually dependably trade fiat currencies as Ethereum tokens, that solves a ton of problems, I think. And so in sort of the everyday cases where you want to effectively trade for some fiat currency, you can trade for that representation on Ethereum and then have that insofar as it's instantly redeemable for its, its actual fiat value, then it's good.
But. Okay. So, looking forward, you're obviously live now, which is great. What are the things you're looking at in the near term? What are the kind of key challenges for you guys as a team? And then longer term, what are you looking at?
So we are still in a mode of, I mean, still, you know, it's been 24 hours. we're in a mode of just getting it out there. And just working on distribution, working with just pulling in partners, you know, reaching out to ecosystem projects that want to bring trading into their applications. Still working on working with market makers and liquidity providers to come into the system and provide liquidity. Still about sort of bootstrapping the essential components of the network. And we do believe that once these components are in place, and the plumbing is there, liquidity is just kind of moving freely throughout the system, people's needs are being met, that some really interesting things will emerge through the just kind of free form peer-to-peer value transfer that we can facilitate. And that's, you know, that's just about like economic potential. And that's where we want, you know, we want this platform to really have a part in that change.
Yeah, and were you working with Galaxy and Mike Novogratz? Is he an investor?
Novo is an advisor.
Advisor,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, we have an incredible group of advisors that are incredibly supportive and great, just people to talk to about a lot of this stuff. So
yeah, I guess there's I guess you just come up against a bunch of things you just don't plan for, right?
Yeah, of course.
You become I know you're on the tech side, but have you had to become some kind of businessman as well?
I mean, what's a businessman?
Yeah, true. I guess somebody who appreciates the economics of what they're involved in beyond just the technology and the platform.
Yeah, of course. I think. Well, so you know, trading is an essential activity.
You know,
trade has existed as long as we have. And just an appreciation for what that is and what can emerge from new systems of trade, I think, is definitely something that the only reason that I have the kind of visibility into that is because we've been able to create this kind of system. So I think as a team, we are technologists, but we certainly see the business and economic and really potential for change here.
Okay, and just to close out, you know, tell people how to find AirSwap and how to find you and kind of what you want them to do and what they should be aware of.
Definitely. So you find me anytime. I'm Don Mosites, DMOSITES on Twitter.
I'll share that in the show notes.
Okay. You can find us at airswap.io.
Okay.
And you can actually just go directly to airswap.io/trade and it'll just bring out the marketplace. You can make trades in place.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, look, I really appreciate this. Very interesting, lot to learn. I think it's definitely going to be something I'm going to use because it solves a use case issue I have in that I'm lazy and when I want to buy, I just want to buy instantly. And you've also got a great interface. So yeah, congratulations and great to meet you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
How was that? Did you enjoy it? Pretty cool and chilled, laid back guy, Don is right, especially with all the stress that goes with launching a platform like AirSwap. But yes, do go and check it out. Honestly, I'm not just saying it because it's on the show. It's an amazing platform. It's so easy to use. It looks really cool and they have a bunch of really cool tokens on there, ones you've probably seen and buying up. So yes, go check it out. If you're lazy like me, it's so easy to use. It's so easy to buy from. And I do predict massive things for these guys. Also, big thanks and a big shout out to Rob, aka Crypto Bobby, for hooking me up with this. And also just thanks him for his hospitality while I was there. We went out, we had a lovely meal, a couple of beers. It was great to finally meet him. Please do support the show. Reviews on iTunes help massively because they help when people search for the show. And follow me on any social media channel, Twitter, Facebook, don't bother with LinkedIn, but Instagram, Medium, Steam, any of them. I'm at What Bitcoin Did on any of them. If you can't find me, well, I would find that amazing because I spam every single social network with my handle. Please share the show with your friends and family and do reach out to me. I do try and respond to anyone. My email is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And yeah, it'd be great to hear from you. As I mentioned before, I'm off to Japan on Monday. Going to be on a weird different time zone. If you're out in Japan, if you're in Tokyo and you want to hang out, just give me a shout. Speak to you soon. Have a great week. Cheers.